This is the chapel service for November 28th, 1961. Dr. Staley is leading the service.
For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, but we are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. In a different vein, I am happy to announce that the first faculty student talent show will be held this week on Thursday night at 8 p.m. in the gym. We had one last year that was a knockout. I remember it with appreciation and enjoyed it tremendously that night. There's more talent here than one might suppose among a group of dry old preachers. And I think that you will be happy to be there. Unfortunately, I have to go to what we call the president's meeting of the seminary presidents in Miami, such a horrible place to go, but we must do our duty. And so I shall be leaving, Lord willing, Thursday afternoon and preach for one of our old classmates, Dr. McDowell, H.P. Amos, in Kissimmee, Florida, on Sunday morning, and then on to the meeting on Monday, which means that this is about the last time I will be in chapel with you as leader before the Christmas and the New Year holidays. And I take this opportunity to wish for all of you the most joyous and in-seeing holidays you have ever had. There will come a time of rest from the pursuit of knowledge in its stricter sense, and time for recapitulation of thoughts and meditation. And I do believe that sometimes during the Christmas seasons, we come to our deepest experiences with the grace of Christ and with his Spirit. So may it be with you. And if you will, while you are away on holiday, most of you, I presume, will go back perhaps to your old college home or to your own home, but you will be in contact with young ministers and volunteers for the ministry of various sorts. If you can say a good word about this school and invite them to come, I think it will be a fine thing. I believe that we have here, when we weigh the ups and downs and the various factors, as good and great a seminary as Baptists afford. That's not to say we are perfect. I would despise myself for trying to say everything is perfect at Southeastern. I hope it never will be, because then we would become complacent, sure enough, and probably useless. But we do need to recruit as well as we can those who should study here, and you can be the greatest help in that. Now this morning, very briefly, I'm speaking because I did not want not to speak. As Augustine said when he wrote about the Trinity, he said something in order to keep from being silent. And I've had this blooming virus and the headaches and so on that go with it long enough now that last night I was totally unable really to study to speak of. And yet I want to give a sort of pastoral talk, if I may, based first upon a passage familiar to you, if you're at all familiar with me, because it is one of my favorites. In the first chapter of Philippians, Paul says, "And this I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all discernment or judgment, that ye may approve things that are excellent, that ye may be sincere and without offense until the day of Christ." And that word pray, the first prominent word in the passage, is one that of late years has halted me more and more in my thinking, because I try to stop myself from hastening on, just saying the words of a familiar text, and ask myself some pretty penetrating questions. Do you really pray? And I suppose I would have to confess to you, as most men, I'm afraid, of my generation would confess, that in some measure at least, we have lost the art or the power of prayer. And yet, I think I can say one thing that would be true. Someone way back in the early days of my ministry put it in a little verse, I suppose. Prayer is the soul's sincere desire, uttered or unexpressed. And I think that I could stand the test of saying that my soul's sincere desire, infrequently uttered perhaps, often unexpressed, is that this school, that Christians everywhere, that our Southern Baptist churches, and that churches of any denomination anywhere in the world shall truly understand the Spirit of Christ and live out as much as is possible to each one or to each group that Spirit. So, with some integrity, I can take this little passage again and say, I pray, my soul's sincere desire is that we, and when I say we, I think not only of this seminary, we all have ties perhaps even closer than the seminary, though that's a little hard for me to conceive, even when I think of my own family, that my grandchildren and my children and my nieces and nephews, all my own family is dead. You know, I'm the last of that family, but there are some children here and there. And then I get to thinking of the little church, Rock Spring, that I visited Sunday, as being typical of thousands of churches in our own convention and of tens of thousands of churches in the various denominations. And when I saw those people and spoke to them Sunday, looking into their faces rather easily, for I speak usually extemporaneously, I sensed that I was in a church. There's church there. There was consciousness of God there. There was a right prayer attitude when one of the members led in prayer. And I pray that their love and our love may abound yet more and more, that we'll find what is seemingly the secret of the Christian life, love of God and love of the brethren. It was John, I believe, who wrote, this is the life eternal, to love God. And if we love him that begat, we love them also that are begotten of him. We love God. We love the people. The word is almost synonymous with the word faith, that we may more and more tie our lives up with God, and that we may more and more realize the positive glory and usefulness and practicality and activity of love flowing through our lives, that it may abound yet more and more in knowledge. I do not care this morning to dwell on that word knowledge. We have it emphasized here so steadily in so many places, of course all the classrooms, that you know something of what it means. I do recall the inspiration I got from one teacher in Louisville, Dr. A.T. Robertson, who used to have his light burning way, way late at night. I've studied late all my life, nearly, when I studied at all. And at 12 or 1 o'clock, I'd look out of my window and still see the light burning in his office. And I joined that sight and the consciousness of his activity to another little verse. The heights by great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night. There is an ideal for knowledge but I believe you have it. But that next word, if I may dwell just a moment on it and try to impress it, and in all judgment, judgment that will enable you to approve the things that are excellent. And here comes the pastoral word. Naturally, I suppose, in this generation, a generation that is marked by a lack of knowledge of so many things, because the knowledge of some things has multiplied so rapidly. I want, if you'll let me, to read a few lines here from the current issue of U.S. News and World Report. The editor thought it that the statement of the Catholic bishops of America concerning the moral situation in America was worth reprinting in whole with his emphatic approval, his admonition that his readers pay attention. The statement starts by telling, sorry, I'll be through in a moment. The statement starts by saying that de Tocqueville in the early 19th century and James Bryce in the late 19th century said that religion was a very powerful factor in America. But the time has come to confess, he says, they say, that our national ideal no longer rests upon a foundation of broad and solid popular morality. Ignorance of moral principles and the rejection of the very notion of morality are on the rise today and threaten to undermine our nation and its most sacred institutions. This present moral deterioration cannot be interpreted as a mere temporary relaxation of standards which will be followed by a sort of moral reform which past experience would lead us to expect. The conditions we face are unique. For them, the past gives neither precedent nor guide. Many men are questioning and often denying the objective distinction between good and evil and the ability of human reason to know with certainty what is right and wrong. They are cutting themselves off completely from moral traditions. For the first time in history, they find themselves without a moral law to break. Brethren, that seeps over. As far as in me lies, this seminary will not tolerate foolish action persisted in by any of us. I get reports, and I shall not spread them here, but in and out of this seminary, we bear its name. We bear in large measure the reputation, as it were, of Jesus. I would admonish you to be able to discern what adds to that reputation and what detracts from it. Let not the philosophy of the world replace the Christian viewpoint. We do have a moral law to break. We do have love, the love of God and the love of our brethren to violate. Let us not violate it. Would you bear a moment? I'm sorry, I really am, that I've gone over time. But this, a kid came to me one day when I was teaching high school and wanted to talk. And in short, he said, I want to be somebody. And then quickly he said, but I love to kiss the girls. And I felt foolish, but he wasn't fooling. And then I told him that story, which perhaps you've heard. It happened to me, really, but it's gone around a good deal now, about the children catching butterflies when grandmother was looking on a porch over a yard up in West Virginia. And she called to me, the eldest, and said, bring me that jar. We had put some butterflies in it. And she said, I wouldn't catch any more if I were you. And I said, why, we're not going to hurt them. We're going to let them go. She said, hand me the jar. And she took it and she said, you see there those marks, those greasy, wet-looking marks on the butterfly's wings? Yes, ma'am. That's where your greasy, damp little fingers have touched them, and their wings are light with a dust, a sort of pollen that's on them. And when you touch them, that's bruising. And when you let them go, they won't be able to fly right anymore. any more than you could run right if I were to take a stick and whack you over the leg. And I said to that chap, B, I'm not telling you God sends you straight to hell if you kiss a girl in lightness, but I am telling you there come a day when you see things more clearly, when you stand beside a lovely girl and you are marrying her, that you'd give half the world if your life were as clean as you think hers is. This I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all discernment, that you may approve the things that are excellent.